You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
This week on the Fieldhouse Files, Pacers head coach Nate McMillan joins me for a fun, wide-ranging conversation, ending with his memories from battling Michael Jordan even before he was MJ. And welcome into another episode of the Fieldhouse Files. I'm Scott Agnes. I hope this finds you well as we have brighter days ahead and potentially basketball resuming sometime this summer. That is all still up in the air for now. In the meantime, The Athletic continues to pump out outstanding, unique content to keep you both informed and entertained. And right now, we're still offering that 90-day free trial. Or even better yet, for my listeners, get 40% off the annual price by going to theathletic.com/fieldhousefiles. Meanwhile, Pacer players and coaches are still out of town and with family. That includes Coach McMillan, who is back home in Raleigh, North Carolina. And recently he agreed to make another appearance on the show, and this time I wanted to have a different conversation because so much of what I discuss with him is about that day, that week, an upcoming feature, or quite frankly, this year, it was about the plethora of injuries that they continued to deal with. No, this I wanted to be different, and I think you'll enjoy it. We talked about the importance of routine, how he leans on the three T's and three C's, and how leadership has been critical in his time with the Pacers. Plus, he shared something I had never heard him talk about before and took me back to his childhood days in Carolina. Let's get to it. My conversation with Pacers head coach Nate McMillan. Nate, I know you've missed all of us on the Pacers beat. Can you share with me and Pacer fans kind of what you've been up to over the last 6 weeks?
I certainly do miss you guys, speaking with you every day. But, I'm in North Carolina and, I've spent the last week and a half, here. I was in Indy, the first 2-3 weeks, the postponement of the season, and, my condo was closing in on me, staying inside, every day and not being able to go to the gym and work out, got a little tight in there. So I came down, to North Carolina to check on some family and to, give myself a little space and, just waiting, this thing out and, hoping that we can get back out on the floor, here real soon.
The strange thing is all of us, especially in the NBA, are so used to our routines. And yeah, that's completely been disrupted. And right now you should be preparing for a playoff series. But instead, what are you doing? You're keeping in touch with your players? And have you transitioned maybe even into your off-season stuff, such as reviewing players' film from the year?
Well, what I've done, the first week, as soon as this was the season was postponed, really it was a shock that I think went through certainly the NBA, but, the entire country, where, things just came to a halt and, it was almost like, losing a series and a season is over, but in this case, it was just postponed, so the first, week or so, I think everybody was just in shock. You didn't have a routine. You really didn't know what to expect. We started to, I was staying up late and getting up late and, really didn't have that routine, but, quickly, I would say probably the next week after, sitting around wondering what was going to go on. I knew that I needed to get back to a routine. We were in contact, with our players. We've been in contact with our players, throughout this, time off and, just really updating them with, information that we're getting, from, the league and from the organization, and you know, checking on those guys to see, you know, how they're doing and you know, their families are doing. But you know, you do need to get back into a routine, and I did get back into my routine, which is you know, getting up 6:30, getting up and doing something, and you know, working out some, and you know, just, you know, really looking at a lot of basketball, you know, talking to a lot of you know, friends, family, coaches, a lot of people, you know, and speaking with those folks, checking on them, and doing some things that, you know, you really just didn't have the time to do, you know, when you when we were in midseason. So, you know, waiting this thing out and hoping that, you know, we can, you know, play basketball here soon.
Have you taken on or reduced any bad habits? Are you drinking less coffee or anything like that?
No, man, I'm still getting up. You know, I get up at 6:30 and try to get moving around 7:30. And I do have to have my cup of coffee. I still get my cup of coffee in the morning and, you know, try to work out, you know, every other day. You know, I've put so much pounding on this body that I can't go every day, you know, far as, you know, exercising and doing things like that. But, you know, the routine is pretty much still the same. I've been doing a lot of things around the house. You know, my wife got me doing fixing furniture. I mean, all kinds of things, man. I really need to get back to work, because this work around the house, being a handyman, it's not something I want to continue to do.
Yeah, I was going to say, this is a time where you're figuring out how much you love basketball and maybe how much you're not good around the house or staying still and kept to one room. You're used to traveling around the country at this point.
Well, you know, what we talked about with the players, you know, really this is a life lesson, you know, for all of us. And, you know, where, you know, your parents talk to you about educating yourself and, you know, what are you going to do if you don't have basketball? And, you know, this day is going to come for all of us, where the game stops and it's over for you. And what are you going to do, you know, life after basketball or going into retirement? And, you know, you need to really think about that. You know, I've been doing that awful lot, certainly a lot more now than I have been in the past. But, you know, this is something that I think about often, is what else do I want to do or can do if basketball is taken away from me? And you know basketball, you know, our normal lives have really been taken away from us, and it's really an opportunity for you to reflect and think about your life and think about how blessed we all are to have, you know, jobs and to you know, have you know, jobs and family and friends and a place to go, you know, food on the table, you know, all of those things that I think we take for granted. You know, you look back at it now and, you know, we don't know if it's going to get back to that life that we were living before all of this happened. And, you know, the fact of the matter is there's a lot of people in this country that go through what this country is going through every single day, where they lose their jobs, they lose their careers, they don't have food on the table, they are struggling, you know, they need help, they need assistance. And now I think it's just a light shining on what a lot of people have been going through for a long time. And, you know, now a lot of us are going through it, if not all of us are going through, you know, some of these things where we've lost our jobs, we've lost our careers, we need help, we need assistance. And, you know, you just, you know, I've looked back and just thought about how blessed I've been, and a lot of us, we've been to have all of these things, and but now to have them taken away from you, you know, we should be better when we get that opportunity to go back to life as we knew it.
And I think the crazy thing about you taking over as head coach, forget the coaching and the X's and O's and everything, is nothing about you in this role has been typical or easy. And what I mean by that is right away you had Paul George wanting out. Then you had that trade. Then you had Victor's injury. Now you went to India. And now you have Jeremy Lamb's injury and this stoppage. And I think as a guy you are that preaches calm waters and staying lifted, and this is a time even with the players and everyone in the league, I worry about even the mentals in all of this, right? I think that's been huge, and I think that's where you can play a big part probably in all this, is just your leadership and comforting of these guys when they need it beyond the basketball.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we talk about adapting all the time, and you know, that's something that I've learned that you have to learn to do throughout life. You know, is adapt to the conditions, adapt to the situation, you know, not only in life, but out on the basketball floor. You know, right now we are using a lot of, you know, the things that we talk about during the season and in the locker room. And it's not just for the basketball floor or the court. You know, it's really everyday life. You know, we talk about, you know, our 3T. And, you know, the 3T for us is trust, toughness, and, you know, being together. And, you know, one of the things that you have to do right now is, you know, the trust part of it is we got to trust these experts, you know, and what they're telling us that is going on in this country, around the world. And, you know, we got to be tough. You know, we're going to have to, you know, tough it out. In this situation, it's difficult for everybody, but we have to be tough in this situation. We talk about being together. You know, we are all in this together, and it's really good to, you know, be a part of of an organization, and being able to be connected, with a group at, during this time. It's not just the Pacer players or the Pacer team right now. It's the entire organization. And we have, you know, a conference call weekly that Rick and Kevin and Chad and Donna, you know, all of those guys, they set up where all of the employees for the Pacers organization can hear what's going on, the latest news. They can ask questions. You know, we have our doctors on there. We have all kinds of people. We've had the mayor come in and speak to us. But to be connected and be together, I think is really important. You know, we talk about our three C's during the course of the season. And when we're playing, you know, we always talk about our three C's during a game, and that's calm, clear, and being connected. You know, at this time, you got to be calm. You know, you have to be patient. Everybody wants to get out and do some things, but you gotta be calm in situations or in a time like this. You know, talk about being clear. You know, take this virus serious. You know, clear about what you need to do, and how you need to protect yourself, your family, and other people, you know, and being connected. You know, you got to be in contact with, stay connected with what's going on out here and the changes that are happening. So, you know, we're using our standards, and we're talking to our players about 3T and the three C's, far as how we adapt to this situation that we're currently living in.
You personally talk about those three C's often. Where did that come from? Was that another coach? Was that just you coming up with it? Or
I take a little bit from all my coaches, you know, and I've had some really good coaches. You know, it's almost like parenting. You know, at the time that you are with those coaches or your parent, it's like, and they're telling you things, and they are showing you things. You know, you're rolling your eyes, and they're getting on your nerves. And you know, as soon as you grow up and become a man or an adult, you think back on all the things that those coaches were saying and that your parents were saying, and you remember that those things are so important. So I've basically kind of gathered that throughout my career, you know, my life, and, you know, just thinking what's important, especially on a basketball court, and during that last 5 minutes of a basketball game, that you need to have with you out on that floor. And we always put on the board, you know, that's always the key for us during the course of a game, is to be calm, be clear, and be connected out on the floor. So it's just something that kind of came up with, you know, throughout my basketball days.
Gotcha. I've seen you now coach, and then back when you were playing, it seems like whenever I talk to people, some of the first things they mention beyond your game was just how you've always been organized, always been thorough. Was that always been a trait you've possessed, or is that something maybe you attribute to your parents? What do you think about that?
Scott, that's a fear. You know, that's just a fear of failure. I've always, you know, some people say I over-prepare, but just the fear of failure and not wanting to fail. You know, a long time ago when I was playing basketball, I didn't really start playing basketball in school until I got into the 10th grade. You know, at that, you know, when I was growing up, it was called a junior high, where we had 7th, 8th, and 9th graders. And high school was 10th, 11th, and 12th. But junior high school is where a lot of kids started playing basketball. I wouldn't try out for my basketball team because even though, you know, in my community, I knew I was one of the better players. Well, I didn't know, but when I was playing with the kids in my community, I had a lot of success in the community and in the parks and recreation. But I was afraid to go out for the school team because I was afraid of getting cut from the team, not making it. You know, it's almost like that story, Michael Jordan getting cut from his 10th grade high school team. So finally, once I got into high school and my 10th grade year, my brother, I have an older brother who was the father figure for my family, made me go out. He knew I was good enough to make the team. But that fear of failure kept me from trying out for high school or school sports. I always stayed in the community center and played park and recreation sports. You know, I played all sports, basketball, football, baseball, did well in all sports. But once I got to high school, I thought the basketball was probably the safest sport. And my brother decided that, look, you are going out, or I'm going to beat you up. One of the two, you know, so either you deal with me or you go out for this team. End up going out for my 10th grade team, making it. But that preparation is really that fear of failure, you know, making sure that you are prepared for whatever it is that you are, you know, the task that's at hand and that you're going to do.
That's amazing to me, the fact that you kind of picked it up in the 10th grade, then went on to later play and have a good career at NC State, and of course we know in the NBA. And then it was really cool, just last year, your high school retired your jersey. So it just a few years there, the type of impact you were able to have, that had to be pretty special for you.
It was. It really was, you know. And the thing about that was there were so many really good players that came before me, that played at my high school. One of them was, you know, the son of a legend in our community is TJ Warren. His father and I played at the same high school. His father, Tony, was a legend in our community, and he was a great player, you know, a guy that I would go up to the park and watch him play. They all would play on Saturday mornings, and, you know, guys like David Thompson and Monty Towle and, you know, those guys who played at NC State would come over to this community center where I grew up at. And Tony Warren would be playing with these guys. And I would just sit there and watch them. I was a, you know, little young kid sitting on the sidelines, but watching them play. And Tony was, as smooth as TJ Had a real smooth game. Ended up going to NC State, playing at North Carolina State, just as TJ did. And I think he went to the pro, but didn't really have a career in the NBA, but just a local legend around here. And, you know, there was a, you know, Danny Young is another guy that played at my high school. So there was a lot of guys that came before me that their jerseys are not retired right now. And what we are trying to do is get those guys, get their jerseys up on the wall, because I thought, you know, I thought it was a really good thing, but there are some people before me that deserve to be up there. And, you know, that's something that I'm working with the high school about doing, retiring and getting, those guys' jerseys up on, up in the stands. And, but it was a great, you know, great night, for me and, a couple other local guys that, that played.
And you obviously knew about TJ, but I was curious, what was your reaction then when Kevin called you and said on draft, or maybe you were in the room together actually on draft night, say, hey, we got TJ. You go, oh man, I have all kinds of history with that family. I know him.
Yeah, he, you know, I knew about him, and I hadn't met him until he came to Indiana, even though, you know, we are here. And I was just talking to a friend who saw TJ 2 days ago riding his bike.
Yeah.
And, you know, so TJ is here in town. He's riding his bike and he's working out, you know, trying to get himself ready to start the season whenever we start the season. But yeah, he, you know, I was excited, you know, because I knew about his game. You know, I watched him at NC State play, and you know, the few years that he was in the NBA, I knew what type of talent. So really excited about you know, having the opportunity to work with him. Me and his father, we talked a lot. You know, it's a lot of people in the community, people from NC State, you know, all of these people that I know and I'm familiar with, you know, was telling me about him. You know, so they were excited that we were connecting. And it's been a joy. You know, that there were some things that people told us that we saw different. You know, one of the things was he wasn't a defender. He didn't put in that, you know, the effort on the defensive end of the floor. And that's been totally false with us. TJ has been one of our better defenders this season. And I think that's part of, you know, he's understanding what he needed to improve on and coming into our system where we expect you to make that effort on the defensive end of the floor. He came in with that mindset that he was going to be a better defender. And it also helped that David West mentors TJ. You know, David is very close with TJ, and has TJ went through David's program that he has here, and David has been working with TJ you know, since high school. And so David, you know, also told him, you know, what to expect, you know, coming to Indiana. And, you know, he's been a pleasure to work with, and I just continue to see his growth. I think he has a lot more that he'll be able to bring to that organization.
Yeah, you've had several guys that have done a great job of playing better defense than was expected. You go back to, you know, Boyan and Doug, and then and TJ Warren, as you mentioned. I'm curious, for in terms of coaching, you kind of retired and then jumped right in. When did you first consider maybe coaching would be in your future after playing days?
Well, you know, first I want to, you know, my coaching staff has been great. And, you know, I've always felt that, you know, I want some guys that they're capable of replacing me. I want the best, or try to find the best. And, you know, part of what the reason that those guys improve defensively, the guys you just mentioned, is our coaching staff. And Dan Burke is one of the best.
I would love to see him get an opportunity. And I don't even know if he'd want it at this point because of all the extra stuff you have to do, right? Talk to us every day.
He doesn't have that ego. I think he certainly deserves a shot and can do that job. But he's all about You know, wherever he's at, he's going to give you all he has. And, you know, he doesn't have that type of ego, but certainly he could do that job. But he's done a great job, you know, since coming to Indiana. You know, first he was working with Frank, and, you know, I kind of came in and try to fit in where I was needed on that staff with Frank and Coach Burke. But when Frank was let go and I had to pick a staff, you know, Dan Burke became my number one guy. And so there's a reason for these players, I think, showing that growth and improving and getting better on the defensive end of the floor. He's totally focused on that side of the basketball, and he's done a great job. But I got into coaching when I was last year in Seattle. I was playing for George Karl, and you know, George and I had a really good relationship, and I had told the organization that I'm done, you know, at the end of the season. Yeah. And George wanted me to be his assistant. And so I started to think about, you know, again, life after basketball. What would I like to do? The organization, you know, Seattle wanted to keep me around. And George ended up leaving and going to Milwaukee the following season and wanted me to come on as an assistant. But the Supersonics also wanted me to stay with the organization. And Paul Westfall took over as head coach. They put me on the bench with Coach Westfall, and I had that opportunity to be an assistant and learn from some really good coaches, you know, during that time. Dwayne Casey was an assistant at that time. I had, played for Coach Gergrich. So I had an opportunity to look at some assistants as well as work with Dwayne Casey, who I really have a great deal of respect. And you're talking about being prepared for game planning. Both Coach Casey and, you know, a guy like Dan Burke, those guys, when working alongside of them, you have to bring it, you know, because they bring it. You know, they are prepared. They study, they do their homework, you know, they cross the T's and dot their I's on everything that they do. So when you're working with people like that, it forces you to raise your level and make sure that you come in prepared.
Bernie Bickerstaff was your first coach, and I know he had a significant impact on you. What do you remember about your time together and how you still stay in contact frequently even today?
Yeah, Bernie was my first coach, and he was hard. You know, he was hard, and you know, there was some days where it was like, you know, you just wanted to get out of there. But you know, he challenged me. He put a lot of pressure on me. You know, I was a rookie who was, you know, coming into a situation where they hadn't won. They weren't winning. There I was a number two, you know, second round draft pick, and you know, just really a player that I don't know if, you know, what people really thought of me during that time, but I was able to get in and work my way onto the floor and, you know, become a starter for a couple of years until we drafted Gary Payton, but ended up having, you know, a good career, you know, spending all of my years, 12 years in Seattle. But really, after playing for Seattle 12 years, I ended up going into coaching and so spending really 19 years in Seattle. And, you know, all of that started from, you know, working with Coach Bickerstaff, and he was demanding. He was hard. And, you know, at that time, the way he coached during that time, I've had coaches like that. It didn't really bother me. I thought that he certainly pushed me. And if it wasn't for him, I don't know if I would have had that opportunity to spend that amount of time in Seattle.
Do you think being the point guard that you were has impacted your coaching, meaning how open and enabling you are of your point guards, of Darren in the past and this year with Malcolm, as we've talked about before, how, like, even in the first quarter, you go into the game and he knows exactly what you want for him to do and has the freedom to just play on?
Absolutely, 100%. Being the point, running the team, I've always been a player that, I made players better, and I've never had that ego of wanting to be the best player. But I do have that ego of wanting to win. So, for me, it was whatever it takes to win, I will do. And, so if that means, being second to someone or third or, down that totem pole, as long as we are playing right, playing hard, playing together, and we're winning, then I'm okay. But if that's not happening, then I will challenge you, and I will do, whatever's necessary to give us a chance to win. So, the way that I coach, I totally understand what players are going through, what they need, all of that, so at every position. And so I take that, and, that came from me playing that point guard position and having to, set people up, make people happy, challenge people, lift people, encourage them. All of that came from really running teams from a young age.
You played and coached at the highest level. I'm curious, at this point in your career, what do you enjoy about coaching most right now? Is it the competitiveness, the teaching, impacting lives even off the court? What drives you?
It's all of that. It's all of that. It's the fear of failure, and pushing and teaching, seeing if you can grab a group of young men and challenge them, teach them how to play and work as one. And the Indiana, it's just like I coach for all of those, those fans, man. It bothers me when you drive around and you've lost a game. That bothers me. It really does. And I want people, I know that we have an impact on that city, that state, and how people feel every morning when they get up, if the Pacers have played. A lot of people, if the Pacers play and they win, they feel good. And, a lot of times, they start their day off good. The Pacers won last night. If the Pacers lose, you wake up in the morning, you don't feel as good. And, you see people around town, the city, and, you talk to them and they recognize you and they will express, what they feel. But you have an impact on a lot of people, far as how they go through their days. And, I want them to feel good. I want them to feel good about their team and, how we represent them and how we play the game. And, certainly winning is a major part of that. But I want the city, the state, the fan base, the NBA to respect the Indiana Pacers basketball team. And we certainly are going to represent that, whether we win or lose, when we take the floor.
That's really good. I appreciate you sharing that answer. I wanted to wrap up just because everybody's talking about Michael Jordan and the Chicago Bulls and the Last Stand documentary. You lost to them, unfortunately, in the finals going back to the 96 season. But everything surrounding those teams and whenever you went up against them, what stands out to you most?
Well, in that 96 finals, I was injured. I had back issues that, you know, we played a grueling series against the Utah Jazz. You know, at that time, you know, they had Malone and Stockton, and it was grueling. I mean, it was physical. It was a pounding, and, you know, we had gone through Houston. So we went through, some grueling series to get to the finals. And I developed back spasms in the Utah game. I continued to play. I only played in two games in the NBA finals, which, man, you know, the two games that I did play a few minutes, we did win. But they end up winning that series. But I really felt if I was healthy, I just believed, you know, we won 63 games that season. We was just running through the NBA. Our defense was one of the top defenses in the league. We didn't have a lot of shooting, but we were a team that could take you out of what you wanted to run and get out in transition and, just hurt you that way. But with me being injured, it really put a lot more pressure on Gary Payton, who was, you know, our other only ball handler out on the floor. The Bulls, did a good job of really trapping Payton and taking the ball out of his hands. And we didn't have another guard. Hersey Hawkins was more of a two guard, but Gary and I played a lot, and we just didn't have enough. A lot of people say, well, Michael would have just raised his level of play, which he normally does. But I really, really do feel if I was healthy, I felt we really would have had a shot to win that.
Are you watching like all of us on Sunday nights?
Absolutely. I thought last week was great. You know, and what it shows is that, you know, even though you look at these teams and you see the success, there's so much that goes on behind the scene. And, you know, people, you know, talk about Phil Jackson and, you know, whether, you know, he had all this talent. You have to manage that. You have to coach that. And you have to give him credit for, you know, what he did with the teams. Yes, he did have a lot of talent. He had some of the best players to ever play the game. But, you know, you have to manage all of that. And he was able to keep all of that together, or keep it together long enough for those guys to win those titles. And we're seeing behind the scene all this stuff that's going on. And it's what happens with teams. And, you know, I think, you know, you hear those stories about Shaq and Kobe.
Yeah.
And, you know, the problems that they had. But, you know, once they got out on the floor, they put that aside and they were able to win titles. And Michael and Rodman and Pippen and all of these guys, it's interesting to see, what went on behind the scenes. So yeah, I'm definitely watching it. I can't wait for part 3 and 4 to be shown this Sunday. And Michael, I mean, a great player. I knew Mike before Mike. I knew Mike when he was Mike Jordan. and that was high school. My brother went to UNC Wilmington, which is where Michael was from. And Mike would come over to the school to play in the summertime. And the year that he was going into UNC, I was a rising senior. and my brother was in summer school, and he was, you know, telling me he would want to bring me down so I could play against him, because Mike would come over during the day to play. And, you know, he wanted to put his little brother up against this guy that everybody was talking about, the top player in North Carolina. And sure enough, he came over and was playing pickup, and we happened to be on the same team. I never had the chance to play against him. And he was just totally dominating my brother and the players at the university over there. And he went on to go to UNC, and, you know, the rest is history.
How much older is your brother?
My brother's 5 years older. He's he's 6'8". He was a forward, but 6'8", and 5 years older. We played all sports. I used to follow him everywhere he went. I would be a block behind him and his older friends. I never really wanted to play with kids my age, you know, so I would always follow my brother to different community centers and around the city. And, you know, they would throw rocks at me to try to get me to go home. And I would eventually end up where they were. And a lot of times I would just sit there and watch them play. And when they didn't have enough guys, and, you know, guys was tired and they needed one more player, then they would let me play with them. So I always followed him and wanted to really be like him and play with him. And, you know, we played all sports. We were pretty good in football, basketball, and baseball. But, you know, he was that guy that really got me into sports. And, you know, to this day, you know, he sends me all kinds of quotes and messages and about life, and just been a great big brother.
That's really cool. Well, I really enjoyed this, Nate. I appreciate it. We got into different topics than the day-to-day than we always get into, and I think that's really cool.
Yeah, well, thank you. Hope to see you soon.
Yeah, me too.